Syrinx found she rather liked the idea of a boy helping out like this, walking up to utter strangers with curiosity and awe, obviously never thinking they might be dangerous. It spoke of an easy-going world which had few cares, and trust was prevalent. Perhaps the atomists could get things right occasionally. They handed their passport flex over, one at a time, for Andrew to slot into his processor block. The unit looked terribly obsolete to Syrinx, 50 years out of date at least. "Is Drayton's import business in Ken Street still going strong?" Reuben asked Andrew Unwin, overdoing his wide "I-want-to-be-friends" smile. Andrew gave him a blank stare, then his pixie face was alive with mirth. "Yes, it's still there. Why, haven't you been to Norfolk before?" "Yes, it was a few years ago now, though," Reuben said. "All right." Andrew handed Syrinx her passport fleck as his dog sniffed round her feet. "Thank you, Captain Ma'am. Welcome to Norfolk. I hope you find a cargo." "That's very kind of you." Syrinx sent a silent affinity command to the dog to desist, only to feel foolish when it ignored her. Andrew Unwin was looking up expectantly. "For your trouble," Reuben murmured, and his hand passed over Andrew's. "Thank you, sir." There was a silver flash as he pocketed the coin. "Where can we get a ride into town?" Reuben asked. "Over by the tower. There's lots of taxicabs. Don't take one that asks for more than 5 guineas. You can get your money changed in the admin block after you get through customs as well." A small Delta space plane flew low overhead, compressors whistling as the nozzle started to rotate to the vertical, already deploying its undercarriage. Andrew turned to watch it. "I think there's still some rooms at the Wheatsheaf if you're looking for lodgings." He hopped back on his bicycle and pedalled off towards the space plane that was landing, the dog chasing after him. Syrinx watched him go in amusement. Passport control was obviously a serious business on Norfolk. "But how do we get to the tower?" Tula asked querulously. Her hand was shielding her eyes from the Duke's golden radiance. "One guess," Reuben said happily. "We walk," Syrinx said. "That's my girl." Oxley went back into the space plane to collect the cool box loaded with samples of food from Atlantis, and then rummaged through the lockers for their personal shoulder bags. He sent a coded order to the flyer's Vitech processor as he came out, and the stairs folded away, the airlock closing silently. Tula picked up the cool box, and they started off towards the white control tower that was wobbling in the heat shimmer. "What did he mean about overpaying the taxis?" Syrinx asked Reuben. "Surely they have a standard tariff meter." Reuben started chuckling. He slipped Syrinx's arm through his. "When you say taxi, I suppose you mean one of those neat little cars atomists always use on developed planets, with magnetic suspension and maybe air conditioning?" Syrinx nearly said, "Well, of course," but the gleam in his eye cautioned her. "No, what do they use here?" He just pulled her closer and laughed. The Bridge of Heaven had returned to the skies. Louise Kavanagh wandered across Crickley Manor's paddock with her sister Genevieve, the two of them craning their necks to look up at it. They had come out early every Duke Day morning for the past week to see how it had grown during Duchess Night. The western horizon was suffused with a huge deep red corona thrown out by the Duchess as she sank below the wolds, but in the northern quadrant, orbiting starships sparkled and shone. Glint specks of vivid ruby light that raced through the sky, strung together so tightly they formed a near-solid band, like a rainbow of red sequins. The western horizon, where the Duke was rising, had a similar arc, one of pure gold. Directly to the north, the band hung low over the rolling dales of Stoke County, lacking the brightness of the two horizon arcs, where the reflection angle was most favourable, but still visible by Duke Day. "I wish they'd stay forever," Genevieve said forlornly. "Summer is a truly lovely time." She was 12 Earth years old, a tall, spindly girl with an oval face and inquisitive brown eyes. She had inherited her mother's dark hair, which hung halfway down her back in the appropriate style for a member of the landowning class. Her dress was a pale blue, with tiny white dots and a broad lacework collar, complemented with long white socks and polished navy-blue leather sandals. "Without winter, summer would never come," Louise said. Everything would be the same all year round, and we'd have nothing to look forward to. There are lots of worlds like that out there." They looked up together at the ribbon of starships.